You're listening to KPOO San Francisco. My name is Martin Matthews. I'm a certified medical hypnotherapist, and I'm on the line today with my co-host, Julie Matthews. Julie, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, let me turn you up.
Okay, can you hear me?
I can. A little bit louder.
Can you hear me now?
Excellent.
Okay.
All right. Every Thursday at noon, we serve up a palatable taste of the truth on topics of the mind, the body, our earth, our spiritual relations, our economy, really everything that's going on in our collective reality here on planet Earth. And today, Julie and I will be speaking about the state, oh boy, the state of America's health, really, with regard to physical health of our population. And today's focus really is on nourishment and nourishing the future. And I'm going to be interviewing Julie today. We like to do this about every 6 months and really connect in with her because she's the expert about nourishment and nutrition and you know what's going on with our public today. And there was a Julie, I'd like you to just talk a little bit initially about this big article in Time magazine. I mean, this was huge. I mean, really getting out there in the mainstream some significant feedback about the state of our reality and the health of the American public. What were some of the spotlights in that Time article?
Absolutely. There was on June 12th of this year, there was a Time magazine issue, and the whole issue was on, it was called Eating Smart, and everything from why it's important to eat family meals together to nonstick coatings and their toxicity to why grass-fed beef is better for our health. And we've talked, well, last time we talked about why grass-fed milk was better for our health. So there was a whole variety of things on school lunches, and the one that really struck me was first foods and how kids can be healthy with a good start, and how the opposite is also true, how a poor start to nutrition starting at 6 months of age can have a profound impact on the health of our children and our adults. So that's what I wanted to focus on today.
Well, let's talk about it, because, I mean, there's nothing more blatant than, you know, looking at real feedback and finally in the mainstream, people making some simple yet distinct correlations between the dietary habits of America and the outcomes that we're seeing with regards to the overall health of America. I mean, people are not healthy.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, you know, in past shows, we've talked a lot about adults and Americans and the health of our society in general, and we've talked a lot about eating and how nutrition plays a huge impact on this. But I wanted to start at the very beginning and how being unhealthy and having poor eating habits as a child and even as an infant can have profound impacts on the rest of people's lives. So just to give you a sense of how this trend has changed over the years, back in 1970, about 4% of young people aged 6 to 19 were overweight. 4%. And today, that's 15.8%. So in the last 20 years alone, the rate of overweight or the number of overweight children has tripled in the last 20 years. So when you look at a chart, you see everything going pretty steadily over the course of, say, the last, you know, 80 years until the last 20 years, and you see this huge increase. And it's really fascinating when you look at what else is going on. So to give you some examples from this article, there was a study that was done, a survey that was done in 2002, and it was called the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey. And they found that by age 2, 1 in 5, or 20% of babies are eating candy every day. To me, that's just unbelievable. Some more statistics. The number one vegetable, okay, Martin, so I'll have you guess. But what's the number one vegetable for children today?
Oh, boy. I would assume something like, we're talking about really young children, right? Like babies?
Yeah, we're talking, in this case, we're talking about, you know, children 2 to... Probably.
All right, it's got to be carrots, because carrots are always in baby food, and carrots are always the things the kids are complaining about.
That's what I would have thought. Carrots, maybe peas, or, you know, I could see carrots, but no, that's not the answer. The answer, number one vegetable, French fries.
Since when are French fries vegetables?
Well, I'll tell you. In the school lunch program in 2004, the number one, let's see, here we go. In 2004, the USDA approved classifying French fries as a, quote, fresh vegetable.
Hmm.
So, according to the USDA, French fries are a vegetable.
Now, this is a really great reality sandwich subject here because, you know, we want so much to believe that our government is setting standards or doing some strict regulation of the kind of foods that our kids should be having in schools, right? We have this USRDA, we have all these different things, and we'd like to just kind of, you know, sleep on it knowing that, hey, you know, the government should know what's healthy for our kids, and clearly they must have some guidelines and some strict requirements for the foods that they're serving our kids in our public schools. Seems like nothing could be further from the truth when we really investigate and see how much influence over what those foods are by the companies that are selling it, not only to our kids in the retail levels out there when they do get out of school, but are now, you know, selling directly to the school lunch programs, right?
Mm-hmm. You would think that's the case, but it's not. They are, in order to try to get vegetables into kids, they consider ketchup a vegetable. They consider salsa a vegetable. So chips and salsa would be your vegetable serving. French fries. So, you know, and if they do put a vegetable on the plate, children, these kids, because they haven't been expecting it and aren't familiar with it, they just ignore it. So, and they don't eat it. So they, that's the state of the lunch program, which you can imagine is not a good thing.
Yeah, it's quite embarrassing. I mean, I'm also, I printed out a couple pages from that report, and I'm looking here at the percentage of adults that are overweight from, I just wanted to, I hope I'm not interrupting too much here, but just want to throw out some of these statistics because it goes back to, this is the 28th study that they've done over the years. So there's some great archival data here that goes back to the early 60s. And both sexes, for both genders in the U.S., in the study that they did in 1960 to 62, as far as their classification of overweight, 44.8% of the public was overweight back in the early 60s.
Okay.
And then at the turn of the millennium here, the study done in around 2002, 65.2% overweight.
Wow.
Obesity rates from the same time frame, from 13.3% in the early 60s to 31% obese.
Tell me, say those again?
13.3% in 1960 to 62. And 40 years later, 31.1%.
Wow. So we're seeing a tripling in not only the children, but we're seeing an equal tripling in the adults.
And then, of course, also a similar decline in those categorized as healthy weight. 51% of the public 40 years ago was at a healthy weight. Today it's down to 33% and dropping.
Wow.
So significant trends here that, I mean, I don't know what else we could correlate this with other than, you know, what it is that we're eating.
Yes. So let's give you an example. There are 2 to 5-year-olds, we'll add on to that overweight conversation, 14% of 2 to 5-year-olds are overweight. That's 2 to 3 times the rate from the 70s and 80s. And 26% are at risk of becoming overweight. And now doctors are saying that they're seeing children as young as 10 months old as overweight. So let's give you some reasons. Children's preferences of food choices are established very early in life. They did some studies showing that 8-year-olds liked the same foods as when they were 4. So if you have foods that you're eating when you're 4, you're still going to be liking those when you're 8. And then also found that it appears that preferences form as early as 2 years of age. And when we look up above from our conversation and we see that 20% of babies are eating candy every day of the age of 2, if preferences are formed at age 2, and in the study that was done, 20% of 2-year-olds are eating candy every day, Well, there you go. You now have a trend that started. And the disappointing thing about this is that when someone is 2 years old, you have 100% control of everything that goes in their mouth. So the only way this 2-year-old is getting this food is because an adult is feeding it to them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the disturbing part. There is some information showing that moms don't feed their babies foods that they don't like. So if mom didn't like Brussels sprouts, which my mom didn't, I never ate Brussels sprouts until I was an adult, and now I love Brussels sprouts and didn't understand why my mom never ate them. But that trend continues so that we eat less and less and less vegetables, because if mom didn't like it, we're certainly not going to get it, and if we didn't get it, we're not going to like it, we're not going to feed it, and it just goes on and on.
Yeah. Mm.
So let me give you another interesting study here. The top 10 foods of children age 2 to 18. So these are the foods that kids eat the most frequently. You want to guess on any of them?
Chips, Doritos.
Yes. Number 8, chips, corn chips, potato chips, and popcorn. All right, guess another one.
Are these drinks as well? Or just
yeah, any top 10 kind of things.
It's got to be Coca-Cola.
You're right. Number 6 is Coca-Cola.
And I'm guessing
or soft drinks.
It's got to be like hamburgers, things like that.
Yep. Okay. So beef. That's all right. We're not considering that junk food. We'll just put that in the beef category.
Okay. What else is on the list?
So we have, starting at the top, number 1, milk. Number 2, bread. Number 3, cakes, cookies, and donuts. Number 4, beef. Number 5, ready-to-eat cereal. Number 6, soft drinks. Number 7, cheese. Number 8, potato chips, corn chips, and popcorn. Number 9, sugar, syrup, and jam. And number 10, poultry. So if you look at this list, out of the top 10 foods, there is not a single vegetable or fruit in the top 10. These are children aged 2 to 18. If you were to consider potato chips or jam or a fruit or a vegetable, then I suppose you would have those in the top 10. But truly, there is not a single fruit or vegetable in the top 10. Out of those foods I just mentioned, 6 of them are highly processed, and 5 of them are very high sugar foods. So you can see that our children from an early age are eating foods that clearly are adding to the obesity and the health epidemic, or the disease epidemic that we're having today.
And people say that there's no collusion, right? I mean, I hate to use the word conspiracy, but I mean, there's definitely some sort of connection, something going on here over the years with regards to the foods that are served to our kids in school, the foods that parents are being influenced to feed their kids over the last 25 years. The ancient wisdom that our grandmothers knew seems to be long lost, and nowadays it's all this junk. So I've got to ask, where are the standards? I mean, if we have USRDA standards, we have all these recommended food pyramids and such, which I know you and I have some definite contention with, but still, I don't really see any of that truly playing out in what kids are actually eating. So what's your take, Julie, as a nutritionist and running into a lot of clients out there? Where are some of the breakdowns, do you think?
Well, I think one of them is, it would be nice if we had people out there looking out for the public's best interest, which we assume that it's happening. But it's clearly not happening when the USDA just made French fries a fresh vegetable. So when you look at it, you have to look back and say, you know what, it's really not the government's responsibility. It's really our responsibility. And this is a trend that we just keep offsourcing our responsibility to, quote, experts, and not taking any of that responsibility for ourselves. And I actually think that that's a big problem. So, yeah, there aren't government standards that are acceptable. But you know what? We really need to be responsible for ourselves. And if we were to go back to not expecting someone else to tell us what to do, or not expecting the food manufacturers to leave it to them to make the foods healthy, and we just went by what the ancient wisdom was, like you said, and we would eat what our grandparents ate, then we would be in a much better situation than we're in. So I think a lot of the breakdown is that we're just not thinking, and we don't have any, we don't really have a lot of people to turn to, because we look at our parents and our parents' parents, and, you know, if we were to go back far enough, we would see that, but we're kind of removed from that. So our best source of information and knowledge are going to be the young people today that are just having children. But you know what? They don't have a very educated perspective.
Mm-hmm. And we've got a system that, you know, certainly that an economic system and a healthcare system that grows and feeds, unfortunately, on the ill health of our collective public. And everywhere we look, we see increased rates of diabetes, various cancers. There's all kinds of stats when you look through these numbers. I mean, it's really quite startling at the increases in diabetes over the just really over the last 20 years, even, and how much that feeds this healthcare system. And there's also facts and figures here about the increase per capita. Actually, you know, here it is, right here. I just found it. I just want to interject this. In 1960, the per capita healthcare expenditures in the U.S. were $126. 2002, it's $4,695. Granted, there's inflation over that 40 years. However, I don't think it's quite that much. So healthcare has been perhaps the greatest growing industry over these years, and it feeds off of the ill health of our public, which is directly fed on, to use an odd word, by that which we're eating and the patterns that we're replicating in our schools and in with regard to the nourishment of our kids. And I think the message that you're really pointing out here, Julie, is that there's nothing worse that we could outsource than the responsibility of the health of our children.
Right. We can't just assume that because these products are marketed to children that those are what is truly the healthiest for us, because we know that the healthiest things are going to be fruits and vegetables and whole foods and whole grains, and that doesn't make any money. There's no money in that for manufacturers and food processors, and so they make a lot of these processed foods, and there's a lot more profit in it. So that's what they're touting. That's what they're selling. If you go into a supermarket, they're everywhere. And so I wanted to share a couple more statistics to give you a sense of where we are today so that we can then talk about where we can go in the future and the way we can take some of this responsibility back or the importance of educating ourselves. That reminds me, we have a campaign in San Francisco called Nourishing Our Children, and it's a campaign that we go into schools and we educate the parents on good nutrition for children. So anybody that's interested in more information on that, you can go to nourishingourchildren.org, and you'll find some good information, and our group would be more than happy to come to speak to your school, because I think that's one of the things we really need to do is educate parents, because clearly parents care about their children, love their children, want the best for their children, want to feed them the best possible. It's just that the parents don't know, and the parents are stuck in the same trap of eating the same stuff as well, and so they're unaware. So that's what we're here for, so I want to just throw that out there.
And the Nourishing Our Children campaign is a nonprofit, yeah?
Correct.
So it's always seeking benefactors and those out there who want to support the campaign in any way.
Absolutely. So let me go through a couple more statistics here for you that I find fascinating. Okay, we're talking 9 to 11-month-old babies. So for those of you out there, this is really young. This is, you know, if you think that you're just feeding solid foods at the age of around 6 months, you're talking, this is a few months after a child or a baby is first introduced to solid foods. 25% of 9 to 11-month-old babies do not routinely consume even one serving of vegetables per day.
Mm.
How could that be? I mean, haven't we all seen the Gerber baby food jars? I mean, what choices, if you're not eating vegetables, what are they eating?
Junk? Sugar? I mean, that statistic you threw out earlier, Julie, about the percentage of babies that are, you know, eating sugar so young, is that simply because we... I'm sitting here thinking, where do we get that idea that a baby is going to be appeased in some way by giving it something sweet?
Because mom and dad are. Because we like sugar, and we think sugar tastes good, so we think that baby would be happy eating it. But really, baby's palate is very, tuned to sweets, because breast milk has a sweetness to it, and so they naturally desire sweet foods. But we're talking, I mean, if you think of milk, you don't think of milk as sweet, but technically it is. And so babies are very, very well appeased by moderately sweet foods, milk, fruits, things like that. When we start to introduce these highly, highly refined, concentrated sugars, their system gets attuned to expecting that level of sweetness in their diet every day. So let me give you an example. If they're not eating their vegetables, what are they eating? So by 9 months old, potatoes are the most common vegetable consumed. By 12 months old, 13% of babies eat French fries every day. 10% of 4 to 6 months old. Remember, you don't introduce solid foods to babies before 4 months old. So the first introduction that babies are really going to get to any solid food is between the ages of 4 to 6 months. So 10% of these 4 to 6 month olds consume sweets, desserts, or sweetened beverages daily. 10%. Again, I ask, where do they get these sweets? By the age of 2, 60% of all toddlers eat some kind of pastry every day.
2 years old?
Yeah.
Eating donuts?
Eating donuts, muffins, cookies. Yeah.
All right, so let's just step out for a second and talk to me about the implications of that. I mean, we're talking to baby. We're talking, you know, two years old, chomping on donuts and stuff.
Right.
Now, I don't want to get into too much of a discussion around, you know, the hard economics of this, because there are, you know, times where we can't always afford other things, and that's a whole different show. But what we do want to talk about here today is a simply expanded and in-depth education about the impact of certain behaviors on babies, on our children, and the absolute importance for us to take personal responsibility in the nourishment of the future. And the simple point here is a significant wake-up call for us as individuals and us as a nation to look around at the impact of our behavior on our health. We have significant data now in all kinds of areas, so it's becoming quite undeniable to look at the correlations here. So the bottom line message is we must take personal responsibility, and we cannot abdicate this to anybody else. So what are the implications, Julie, to a developing child for consumption of some of these things? Let's just say these pastries and donuts and that kind of junky stuff.
Sure. The main thing, and I've kind of mentioned it already, is that the taste buds of children become tuned to these very intense sweet foods, and these cravings and these preferences will literally follow an individual for the rest of their life. They will just desire them, they will seek them out, and so on a daily basis, they will continue to consume these intensely sweet foods for years and years. And that's the biggest problem, is that once you have a child whose taste buds are tuned to highly refined, very sweet, very fatty, fried, salted foods, anything else is very bland and unappealing. So we start setting up habits that will literally follow these children for the rest of their life. There was a quote by Dr. Brown from Texas, who was quoted in this Time magazine article, and he said, quote, "By the time a child is 10, eating chips in front of the TV, it's almost too late." So really, it's essential that we establish good eating habits from the beginning, because once you have a child that's that does, on a daily basis, comes home from school and is eating. I mean, I remember when I was growing up, I'd go over to certain friends' houses, and they had three half gallons of ice cream in the freezer. They had entire packages of Oreo cookies and chips, and I remember going over there. I didn't have any of that stuff in my house. And when you have a child that lives in and grows up in an environment like that, how are they going to know that they shouldn't be eating those foods if they have been eating them every day since they were two?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the really big problem. And then this is why we start to see rates of childhood obesity tripling in the last 20 years. And the reason that we see obesity, diabetes, adult onset diabetes occurring in young children ages 8 or 10 or 12, heart disease. What we now know is that heart disease is hugely based on the amount of sugar we consume, because that sugar starts to damage the arteries. So you start taking all of that sugar combined with all of the fried foods, the French fries, the potato chips, and all of that they're consuming, and we have some really, really bad habits that these children have been eating from a very young age. The other part of that is that when you start to eat those foods, they become your comfort foods. So when you become, when you're an adult later in life and things get difficult, you remember what was comforting back when you were 2 or 3 or 5 years old, when you came home and you skinned your knee, and what did mom do for you? And she fed you cookies and ice cream. Then when you become an adult and you're stressed after a long day at work, what are you going to want? You're going to want cookies and ice cream. So it's really essential to start setting up these habits, not only because of the habits, but because of the way that that changes the taste buds and the palate over time.
Right, right. You know, I think we can think of habits in a little more broader context, because sometimes the word habit has a negative connotation, right? Mm-hmm. We think, oh, we have a bad habit. But habits are but they're patterns. They're patterns of behavior that get set up over time, and we are organisms, we are human beings, we are animals, and we are in effect of all of the stimulus and response conditioning patterns that we engage in over time. Mm-hmm. And the pattern, the behaviors, the patterns, the interactions that, as you point out, start from the very beginning, have the most impact over the long term. Babies are born tabula rasa, that is the term, right? Blank slate, clean slate. Yes, there is genetic influence, and that's a whole different show. However, we're learning more and more in really all realms of our existence, not just in our physical health, but also in our cognitive patterns and our even our capabilities, leadership mm-hmm. patterns and such. Things are learned. We learn these things by engaging in a behavior over and over again over time.
Right.
Right? And it gets cemented in more and more. So we can clearly understand the criticality of the very first things that we're eating. And when you talk about going back to childhood, you know, I remember, you know, growing up, you know, I had all kinds of eating challenges in my life because I never wanted to eat meat. But I learned some of the best stuff from my grandparents and from my grandma.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, they were in their 60s and they were eating healthy, and they came from a generation of people that, you know, were much more in tuned with the foods they were eating and how they were nourishing themselves over time. You know?
Right, and they weren't attuned to that overly sweet palate. So when all of these refined foods and candy bars and things came on the market, they weren't really eating them, and they weren't really promoting that we were to eat them. And so, see, back then, the habits and the trends were, you know, in the direction we wanted to go. But unfortunately, we got away from that.
And I remember, you know, certain little lessons, certain things that sunk in to my mind. I remember my grandma would always tell me that bread was sugar.
Mm.
Starch was sugar. Same thing, sugar. And I don't remember being scared as so much about it, but really just gaining an understanding of the relationship between what I ate and how I felt and my own physical health. And one of the things in the family was that my grandfather had diabetes,
mm-hmm.
and I knew that I didn't want to have that, you know, happen to me. So at a very young age, I learned just a few things about diet and nutrition that over time became, you know, a huge impact and an influence in how I took in all this other information about what I wanted to eat, what I didn't want to eat. And I remember going to school and seeing, you know, other kids' lunches with all this other junky food in it and stuff, going, well, you know, why would, you know, what's the point with that? I didn't really get it. And we can see now today that there's a complete disconnect in the younger generation's understanding of how those foods, how these nutrients or lack of them affect their own personal physical health. And we need to do our best to educate both them, I think, you know, because I personally believe that kids are, and now we're jumping around with our age groups here, but, you know, adolescents are capable of making these understandings, these connections on their own and taking their own charge.
Yes,
if we were only giving them the opportunity to learn.
Some of them do, and some of them even do when their parents don't. They're smart enough to realize it doesn't make sense, that they're not feeling good, that they're not enjoying that, and they start to change things for the better. I've seen that. I have seen kids that 6-year-olds, 8-year-olds in my nutrition practice that will go through the grocery store and tell other moms and dads that they should be feeding their kids organic or, you know, whatever it might be. So, you know, kids are smart. From all age ranges, and you know, we really need to give them the benefit of the doubt. They don't need, quote, kids foods. These kids foods, chicken nuggets, french fries, all of those kinds of things, those are foods that parents serve because they're easy and they appease children because they're, you know, they have a lot of flavor to them, a lot of fried, a lot of salt. And so it's easy. There's no argument. There's no fuss over it. But, you know, I don't know if you remember, but really, why do we have, when we go to a restaurant, have to have a special kids menu? Why isn't it just a smaller portion? Why does it have to be all of these, quote, kids foods, which really are junky? Hot dogs, pizza, chicken nuggets, hamburgers. I mean, you know, it's... Anyway,
we have to remember that kids don't inherently learn to like those things. They're marketed to. That's why they've learned to eat them. You're listening to 89.5 KPOO. This is Reality Sandwich. And today we are interviewing one of our co-hosts of the show, Julie Matthews, certified nutrition consultant. We are speaking all about the state of our collective health here in America today. There's a significant Time magazine article out with all kinds of very important data to look at regarding trends for nutrition and health over the years. And we were specifically talking about children. And we had elucidated very clearly that in the last 30 years, childhood obesity rates have tripled. And we were covering all kinds of information and data about that. And now... let's head into the second half of the show, Julie, and let's cover some of the, you know, people are listening and they're going, well, gee, okay, well, what do we do about it? You know, how do we begin to think differently? And what can I do, either as, you know, a parent who's listening, an uncle or aunt who's listening, a friend, or even, you know, a kid?
Great, great. So I want to outline this with kind of an observation of what's going on now. So just to give you a sense, with all of this low-carb craze that's out there, the Atkins, all this stuff about carbs are bad, blah, 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 it's really interesting to note that if you look at some of the most recent survey information, carbohydrate intake has steadily increased over the last, well, quite a long time, but even in the last 10 years, it's steadily gone up. So I find it interesting that there's a segment of the population that have sworn off carbohydrates as evil, and yet, as a society, our carbohydrate intake has gone up. And I think that there's a couple reasons for this. One is that when you deprive yourself of an entire food category, then you become feeling so deprived that you start binging and going crazy on those foods more than you would. And, you know, people just don't have a very balanced approach to what a carbohydrate is and how to eat a good carbohydrate. And so, you know, the comment I make for the second half of this show is that it's important to just be overall well-balanced, not to take any of these sort of drastic approaches to eliminating all fat, eliminating all carbohydrate, eliminating all sugar, because you know what? We're going to set ourselves up for failure, and we're going to end up doing nothing, And so it's better to just be aware of what these foods are and consume them in small quantities versus some sort of extreme approach. So along with that, I just want to say that while carbohydrate intake has increased, fat intake has slightly decreased. Now, many people would say that that's a good thing. And if fried food and trans fat intake were to decrease, I would say that is a really positive thing. But that doesn't appear to be what's going on. It seems that overall fats have decreased a little bit, but the emphasis hasn't been on the quality of fat. So I would be really happy to know that fried food intake decreased and all of these hydrogenated fats and things have decreased. But really, and the good fats would increase. But unfortunately, total fat intake has decreased slightly with the good fat intake not really changing. And the problem is that women of childbearing years and women that are pregnant, fats are essential. Good fats are essential for brain growth and brain development of babies. And so the trend of overall fat slightly decreasing really isn't positive, especially when you're looking at the types of fats that we're talking about here. So I just want to say, you know, quality and balance is really important when we go forward. Choosing high-quality foods from all the food groups is what we really want to focus on.
Well, let's go right back to the very beginning, Julie. Pregnancy. Moms, future moms, women that are either planning for pregnancy or are pregnant. What are some of the big offenders in the food realm that are, you know, major watch-outs and avoid? Because that's, you know, the patterns begin even before children are born, right?
Correct, correct. So there's a variety of things. Avoiding all of the what I would call sort of toxic foods and food ingredients. So avoiding trans fats. Trans fats are going to be hydrogenated oil, partially hydrogenated fat. So Skippy and Jif peanut butter, if you look at the label, is not ground up peanuts. It's the very second ingredient is hydrogenated or partially hydrogenated vegetable oil. And these are very, very damaging to the health of humans, especially the health of developing fetuses, because these compete with the good fats that are essential for brain growth and brain development. I would also say any artificial ingredients, and this is going to apply to all humans, pregnant, children, and adults. And, you know, it's just essential. So things like avoiding artificial sugars, avoiding artificial colors, artificial flavors, artificial preservatives. And these are found widely in processed foods. And when I'm talking processed foods, I'm talking about the further that you get away from the food itself. So, you know, a whole food might be whole wheat or whole rice or brown rice or something like that. The opposite of that is going to be highly refined processed Twinkies and donuts and cookies that use a lot of these trans fats and preservatives to get them to stay on the shelf for months and months at a time without going bad. So I would say avoiding any artificial ingredients is going to be really essential for pregnancy and for children.
And then what about, you know, the first couple of years of life? I mean, because you were saying here that now this vegetable thing, with the number one vegetable for by age two that children are eating are French fries,
mm-hmm.
right? So clearly that's one of the big offenders, but what are other things that we can spotlight as being big offenders, big, you know, no-nos, please don't do kind of things, and some of the essentials for the first couple of years?
Sure. So, you know, I won't go into all of the preservatives and stuff because that's pretty obvious, and you know, avoiding all that list of ingredients that I just mentioned. But also, I would say the biggest and easiest thing that we can do is don't introduce refined sugar to a child that's under 3 years old. And the reason I say 3 years old is because that's the age where we have less control over them. They start going to preschool, they start hanging out with other children, they start seeing what other people are eating, they're more aware of what they're seeing on television, and it becomes a little difficult to completely avoid those foods altogether. they're going to go to a birthday party or they're going to be in school and there's going to be those foods around. And at that point, you know, there's going to be an occasion where they may eat those foods. But you know what? Until that time, there's zero reason that they need to ever consume something with a high sweetener in it. So some examples are birthday cake, ice cream, cookies, donuts. All of those foods never need to cross a child's lips and for at least the age of 2 or 3 years old, when that crucial time where taste preferences and taste buds are developing, there's no reason to introduce those foods to your child. So hold off on those until you know until they are aware enough to be aware of them themselves, but don't make them aware of those foods before they need to be. So I know that at their first birthday it's really fun, and at their second birthday, you know, they're having a party and there's a cake, and you know, just let's avoid all of that altogether as long as we can, because like we said earlier, taste buds develop and preferences develop as early as 2 years of age. So there is no reason a child is going to know about these foods or miss these foods at all if they're not introduced to them. So, you know, I know that grandma and mom, they want to participate. They want, oh, isn't it cute? Oh, I'm drinking a soda. Oh, let Johnny have a little sip and just see what they, you know, maybe they'll think that the fizzy bubbles, maybe they'll make a funny face. Let's see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do that, because it's just going to encourage them. It's going to get them that first taste of that sugar. And once you do that, that really alters the palate from there on out.
So we're really talking about also, you know, breaking our own personal preference patterns of what we, you know, what happened to us,
yes,
what we see socially, right, and what we feel good about doing, right? Because
yes,
for some reason we feel good about, you know, having a big piece of birthday cake for my one-year-old or something like that, because it's what we've always done and it's what's been socially acceptable and repeatable. But the point that we're making here, again, is about this notion of personal responsibility, breaking these patterns, and we have so much information to tell us how the patterns are disserving the health of our children and hence the health of our overall society and ultimately ourselves, because
mm-hmm.
I mean, really the human race, if you want to make the subject more broader, because we're engaging in large-scale patterns that are not serving us, and now is the time to look around and interrupt them.
Absolutely.
So let's talk a little bit more about younger kids. Younger kids that are, you know, getting into these patterns of eating junky foods and such. What are some of the options there, Julia, as far as, you know, if you can't radically alter it, what are some things that you just absolutely should avoid, and how do we add in some better things and break some patterns there?
Sure. So, you know, boy, so there's two pieces to this. The first one is, what do you do if your child's already eating those foods? What if your child is that 10-year-old couch potato eating the potato chips, or the two-year-old eating the candy? And then the second piece is, how do we start establishing good, healthy eating habits from day one if they haven't been exposed to these foods? So let's start with the first one. How do you change habits that are already there? Well, the first thing is going to come from the family, and what do they see mom and dad eating? So mom and dad cannot be going around eating the croissants and the pastries and the cookies and the ice cream every day and expect their child not to have those foods. So the good habits have to start with the parents. And so really looking on focusing on getting, if the whole family is eating junky, let's turn it around. Bring a nutritionist into the house. If you need an authority or somebody that's different other than the parents to say, let's do this, you can hire somebody to come into your house and go through your cupboards and you know, I've done this before. Find out, you know, educate them. Okay, we're going to dump this cereal and that and this and that. You know, we're not going to eat these chips anymore. Instead, we're going to have, you know, some of these, we're going to have grapes already washed in the refrigerator, and we're going to have carrot sticks already cut up in the refrigerator. And when you want to normally go for these, you know, snack foods, we're not going to have those anymore. Instead, we're going to have these foods. So that can be something that can be done by the parents, if they have the knowledge and the backbone, or they can have a third party come in, which often really works well, especially for older kids, because You know, sometimes it's easy to dismiss what mom and dad say, but sometimes if there's a, quote, authority, it's easier for children to say, that person must know what they're talking about. So I think that's the first thing. And, you know, just little by little educating the children, talking it over with the family, discussing why you want to eat certain things and why you don't want to eat other things, not making these foods bad, because that's just going to make them want to eat them more. And when they go off to college, then you really start to see a weight issue and a power struggle. So we're not vilifying any foods. We're just simply educating. And, oh, did you notice how good you did in your soccer game today? Did you notice what you ate before you went? What did you have for breakfast? What did you have at halftime? You know, these things start to, you can start to educate children by putting the two pieces together for them. And, oh, did you notice when you had a tummy ache today? Or did you notice when you were sick? We were at the, you know, we were at the amusement park and we had cotton candy and blah, blah, blah. So really just educating them and having a dialogue and discussing how people feel in different situations. I think that is really a key piece of this whole thing. So not coming in and militaristically saying, you know, what we ate before is no longer, but really, you know, having some understanding and some patience and little by little switching these foods over as a whole family.
I also like the idea of getting them involved in cooking and preparation of foods as well.
Yes, because kids love to do that, and if they know what's in their food, they're much more likely to eat it.
Yeah, exactly. For me, that was one of the big areas was, you know, uncertainty around, you know, what it was. Mm-hmm. So I would like to get in there and, you know, learn to prepare stuff myself, and then I had much more ownership of it. I mean, we know that, right? The things that we're involved in creating, we are much more attached to the outcome.
Right, absolutely. So let's talk about in our last piece here. So what if you have a family that is just starting out, so you don't have any bad habits developed, or if you have some bad habits that you want to change, here are some things that you can do. Here are some ways to start seeing nutrition and focusing on nutrition. So firstly, organic. Organic is really important for children because pesticides have a serious effect on brain function. The studies that have been done show that fine motor and gross motor coordination can be significantly impaired by exposure to pesticides. So really looking at those pesticides and limiting them as much as you can and really focusing on organic. And I think most people aren't aware, but organic fruits and vegetables have about 30% more nutrients and antioxidants than non-organic.
Mm.
So it's not just a matter of the toxins and the pesticides, but also the nutrients themselves. Because when you farm organically, in order to grow the food, you need to replenish the soil. When you're using these commercial fertilizers and you're stripping the soil in commercial food, that doesn't happen. But in organic, in order to grow it and have it be sustainable, you really need to be supplying these nutrients into the soil. And so you end up growing fruits and vegetables that have a much higher nutrient-rich content. So that's really important for everybody. So I would say eating as much organic fruits and vegetables as you can, as well as much organic dairy and meat as you're able to. One thing I have to say there, though, is that with Walmart coming on board wanting to create organic, you know, macaroni and cheese and all these different things, organic standards have really become compromised, and you're going to see more and more packaged macaroni and cheese, packaged crackers, packaged chips, packaged Oreo cookies that are, quote, organic. Organic does not mean that the food is healthy. Organic just means it doesn't have pesticides added. So be careful of these fancy languaging, and don't just assume that now because it's organic, it's healthy. You still want to know where your sources come from. You still want to go to the farmer's market or know the farmer as much as you can so that you know how these foods are grown and so you're getting whole food versions. So that would be, I would think, one of the first things to do.
Hmm.
Beyond that, I would say that, you know, only You know, going to look at what other, when I talk about whole foods, what does that mean? That means eating as close to the farm as you can. So looking at whole grains. So let's take some examples here. So whole grains would be brown rice, would be, I would even though I'm not a fan, I would even consider whole brown rice pasta or whole wheat bread as sources of whole grain. Now, they do have some processing, so, you know, you don't want to just eat whole grain bread all day and think that that's, you know, as nutritious as eating some homemade oatmeal or brown rice or something. But so to give you in a kind of a range, all of those foods would be whole grains. Be careful of wheat bread. All bread, for the most part, is made of wheat. A lot of times, wheat bread, they use artificial caramel color to make it look brown, and they add a little tiny token of bran and make you think that you're getting a wheat bread. But you really want a whole wheat or a whole grain, where you're talking a brown, brown bread. So that would be something to look for. So whole grains. And then whole milk products, so good cheese and a homemade, you know, a whole yogurt, not sugared yogurt. They have these new things, I don't know if you've seen them, but they're called Go-Gurt, and they are the most, disgusting attempt at dairy I've ever seen in my life. They're these squeezed tubes of sugar, sugared, flavored, colored yogurt, like green-colored yogurt that's got all sorts of additives and flavorings and colorings added. So this is the far end of what we want to stay away from. We want to focus on, you know, naturally made cheese, some sort of plain whole yogurt that you can put your own fruit in, that you can sweeten yourself. Those are the kinds of things that I'm talking here. Encouraging vegetables, carrot sticks, celery sticks, celery with, you know, some natural peanut butter, all sorts of cucumbers, you know, lettuce, salads, whatever your kids will eat. But yeah, broccoli, kids love broccoli, so getting as much of those kinds of whole vegetables as you can. And avoiding things like French fries, potato chips, salsa. Nothing's wrong with salsa per se, but ketchup. Using those foods as vegetables does not constitute getting your vegetables in. So while there's nothing wrong with some of those foods like salsa, you know, that cannot be the child's only source of vegetable intake.
Mm. And you're fooling yourself if you go with something like that. If you say, aha, it's a vegetable, right. See, it counts. Well, you know, you're
right.
Fooling yourself.
And the last one that I would talk about is fruit. So get your whole fruits. You know, in the summer, there's such amazing fruits out there. So, you know, get natural peaches and homegrown when you can, or from the farmer, berries and grapes and nectarines and all of these delicious cherries and things, strawberries that are in season right now. Get those and eat those, cut those up, make a fruit salad, have those available for your kids. They're delicious and kids love them. It's just that fruit normally needs to be washed, maybe it needs to be peeled or cut or whatever. I mean, you don't need to peel them, but some people like them that way, and so they're not that accessible. But if you can make a fruit salad up ahead of time and have it in the refrigerator and tell your children to eat that, that's what we're talking about whole foods. The opposite end of that spectrum are these quote, fruit treats that are targeted to children that are kind of fruit chews. These they're made with artificial ingredients and artificial colors, and they might be lucky if there's any fruit juice in them. And even just concentrated fruit juices and Jamba juices and all of these things have an enormous amount of sugar or concentrated fruit sugar, even if it's natural. So just being aware of those and going towards the whole foods and staying away from as much of the concentrated foods and processed foods as we can.
Julie, thanks for addressing this all-important topic today. We've been speaking about nourishing our children, nourishing the future, being aware, taking personal responsibility. Please don't let any of your toddlers be the ones out there that are eating French fries as their number one vegetable. You can go back and listen to this show, this interview with Julie Matthews, certified nutrition consultant, at realitysandwichradio.com.
Thank you, Martin, and I wanted to say one last thing. I'm actually teaching a cooking class this weekend for First Food Introductions for Babies. So it's called Cooking for Baby, and it's all about nutrition from the age of 4 months all the way to 4 years, and it's all about introducing first foods, making your own baby food, and how to introduce healthy foods from the age of 6 months on. So that's on Saturday. People can find more information on that at nourishthefuture.com or at our website, healthfulliving.org.
Thank you, Julie. And next week on Reality Sandwich, Julie will be here, and forgetting the name of her guest, I'm sorry, but the topic will be ADD, and speaking all about ADD and our children, and really following on with our discussion about the nourishment of our children and the state of our overall health. So you've been listening to 89.5 KPOO San Francisco. This is Reality Sandwich. We'll be back next week. Our final thought today regarding foods is to please remember that nothing tastes as good health feels. We'll be back next week. Coming up next, Connecting the Dots. We'll be right back.